Now, All Access with Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol. Sponsored by Window World. Simply the best for less. Siteman Cancer Center. National leaders in cancer. And by Circa Sports. Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be. On the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
Oh, yes. It is time to get back to it. The OGs, I would say. This is the show right here that got this whole Gas House gang movement going. With Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Bernie Miklas joins us, and indeed, we are joined by the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, Oliver Marmol, who is with us for a fifth season as manager of the club. And Ollie, what is this, 20 years with the organization? Isn't that right?
It is. They've treated me well, man. I have zero complaints. It's been a fun ride as a player, staff member in the minor leagues and in the big leagues. It's been it's been an awesome ride.
Yes, it has. What about the ride here, the first five games of the season? How have you evaluated how your team's looked?
Yeah, these guys have done a nice job. It's been, I mean, opening day was a heck of a lot of fun for a lot of reasons. There's a lot going on that day for everybody. But to be able to pull that one off the way we did was fun, especially if you had an opportunity to be within the clubhouse in spring training and the conversations around identity and what we want to be known for. It was a really good opportunity to show that. So two different ways of winning in game one and two. But I'm glad we were able to pull it off. But so far, man, it's been exciting to watch these guys. They're young, they're exciting. A heck of a lot of fun to manage, I'll tell you that.
Ollie, a lot of positives, and we're going to get to them, absolutely. But one of the things I like to do is to pass along things that fans are talking about the most. So
yeah.
I know there's been a lot of talk about your decision to bat Mason Winforth. It's obviously too early to draw any conclusions, but I think there's a question about that in terms of why you made the decision put to bat him fourth and what your patience level will be. How long will he have that opportunity?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I don't think you have to wait to see games being played to have a question around why Mason in the four hole. I think it's fair. When you look at it, it had a lot to do with a couple different things that I'll talk through. JJ leading off made a lot of sense. And Evan, Burleson in the three, Herrera in the two, and sandwiching Herrera between the two lefties there made a lot of sense. Now, by putting someone, let's say Gorman, in the four, it invites that lefty in the sixth inning, where now J.J. Burley and Gorman are consistently going to get a left-handed at bat, left on left, almost every game. So being able to split it up and not have a lefty behind Burley is part of that reason in doing that. So now, is it unconventional to have someone like Mason Forth? Absolutely. Do I think if he has the right approach, his ability to make contact, stay out of hitting into double plays, and being able to drive in some runs makes sense? I do. So although unconventional, when you look at our roster, there's not a clear four hole, right? I mean, that's just the reality of where we're at, and that's perfectly fine. Now, I think guys are going to get on base ahead of them, which they have, and there'll be an opportunity for someone that can make enough contact and stay out of double plays where there's RBIs to be had there. So putting Mason there and giving him a shot at it is something that obviously we've done. We'll continue to monitor it, but it's honestly not that big a deal to me. I know it's a conversation, but yeah.
A natural follow-up, and again, I want to preface this by saying what we've seen out of Jordan Walker has been outstanding, but it's only four games. That said, would he be a guy that would figure into the cleanup spot after a period of time? I know you don't want to rush things. Like, he's doing so well, why kind of do something different when you don't have to? But is he a guy that could be your four hitter ideally if he can continue to do this?
I love that that's a question, right? Because I think a couple weeks ago you would have been questioning, hey, does he start every day, right? So the fact that we're even talking about this, I think, is an awesome thing. And credit to Jordan for being head down and just continuing to work even when things weren't going his way, right? So the fact that this is a topic is awesome to me. It really is. And it should be. Now we want to make sure we're setting everybody up for success, right? And part of that is slotting them in the right spot in order for them to handle the pressures of the big leagues and continue to have success and build off of it. But at a certain point, should that be in the mix? Sure. I'm more stoked that we're even talking about it. Cause I'll say it again. I don't think this was on anybody's mind 4 weeks ago. So that's why it's, I don't want to react too quickly because I think that's when you make mistakes. No different than Mason. The reason we did it, there's a lot of thought that went into it as to who can handle it and why, and the ins and outs of right, left, right, all the way throughout, and protecting Herrera and Burleson, all of it. So I love that he's off to a good start. I do think what he's doing is something he can sustain. I don't think this is just kind of a one-week thing. His misses, even before he had that big game with the homer and staying on that changeup and hitting it to right field the way he did, his misses were exactly the way you would want. They weren't long and around, ground ball to third. Like, he was actually staying through the ball. He was missing the way we would want him to miss. And that's what gives me some real optimism. So at some point, I'm sure we'll talk about it again, and you won't be shy to bring it up. But at the moment, I think let him have some success there. Let him feel it and enjoy actually catching up to the league and doing some things that continue to spur these type of conversations.
As you said, you don't want to react too quickly about anything. You always want to be prudent in your decisions. Is the kind of season that we've gone into here where it's still kind of a growth year with so much young talent, how much does that color how quickly you will make an adjustment if Wynn isn't really working out in that spot and you want to make a move? Do you have an idea of how quickly you will make that kind of move if you feel like you need to?
I love doing this to you. I don't know why it always falls on you, Chris.
What's that?
But to start the season, who would, like, as a group, you guys, like, who would you have put in the four hole?
I'm not saying I'd put anybody else there. I'm asking you, though, if... You know,
I'll react to it.
Right, right. It's not about, hey, how did you make this move? How stupid can you be? It's just, you know, how quickly will you react?
Not too quickly. The reasons we did it, I'd like to give it time. And it's more of having someone there that can make some contact, not put in Gorman in a situation where he's fourth. And when you bring in a lefty, whether you do it at Vic in the nine or you do it at JJ in the one, right? If you're the opposition and you bring in the lefty there and you have the three batter minimum, then when I pinch hit for Gorman in the four, then they have the upper hand of bringing the righty in there as well. So you never get the upper hand of that matchup if he's there. So you can just let it ride and let all the lefties face lefties, and that's fine. But in order to buy them some right-handed arms coming at them, I think you try to split them up. So it's there's different ways of thinking about it. I don't think we have to react to it too quickly because the options of what you would do otherwise aren't very clear. If something was screaming at us, then sure. But at the moment, I think we can ride this out and just see how it plays out for a little bit.
Ollie, the first three games of the season against the Rays, there were some comebacks. Even that third game, you made a game out of it. But there was another side to that, and that was that you were giving up some crooked numbers also.
No doubt.
The bullpen, I think the fans would also want to know there. How do you feel about it? Yesterday, you had four scoreless innings from your pen. Do you see that sort of working itself out as you go along here? How do you evaluate
it? I do, and I hope it does. I mean, for a lot of reasons, we've seen Swanson be really good. The back end of last year, he did a really, really nice job. You look at the contact against him and Roycroft up to this point, it's hard to continue to repeat that, where you get that soft of contact that doesn't go your way. I mean, on this show, we've talked enough about pitching to contact and swing and miss, but those guys, it's hard to sustain that level of batted ball actually going against you for any length of time. So I do think part of that will clean itself up. I think Soriano has shown really well. I'm glad we made that move. This guy's done a really, really nice job. Him being able to take two innings yesterday was very important. Brule from the left side being able to take those two innings the other day and flip those lefties out of there in order to set up the right-handers for the rest of our pen was important. So, and then Stanek and Riley and those guys at the end, I think those guys are proven to do things really well. So I do feel like it'll clean itself up. But we'll continue to keep an eye on it. There's some guys down below that have done a nice job as well. And at some point, we'll get an opportunity. But no different than our previous conversation of reacting too quickly.
Ollie, I wanted to ask you this and some quick background, not that I have to tell you this. In 2023, Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman were really good. And, you know, especially considering their age, they were really good. And your offense wasn't bad. Your offense was actually, you know, upper half in a lot of categories. They obviously had an impact on that. Last 2 years, they weren't so good. Offense kind of went down with it.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not saying they're totally blamed. I'm saying they certainly were a factor.
No, I get it.
Here's the key question, because everybody wants to know this. Because you did mention Walker. You think that he can sustain what he's been doing, like at least his approach and play discipline. What is it about Gorman and Walker together that gives you as a manager confidence that this isn't some just random thing, that they can, in fact, go forward with this for what we've seen the first week of the season?
Yeah, like Gorman, when you look at his entire spring, there is a lot more contact, less swing and miss, more control in the strike zone, more direct to the ball, using the big part of the field, which when he's going well, that's what he does. And then when he's in that type of headspace, it doesn't matter righty or lefty. If you actually look at when he's gone on certain runs, it's usually started by facing a couple left-handed starters, and it gets him kind of on plane and using left center, which allows him to stay on track with everything else. So we saw it all spring, which was good to see, and we're continuing to see him take his shots, but then kind of downshift and put more balls in play. The other day when we stole second, and then he kind of shortened up and hit that single up the middle. Like, those are the type of at-bats that you need over the course of a full year, man. You pick your spots of when you try to jump ship and hit a homer, but then there's other spots where you need to be a hitter. And he's starting to understand that part of it, where yesterday he took his shot and he got one. And there's other times where, man, runners on base, they're pitching to be tough. I got to shorten up, be more direct. And we're seeing more of that adjustability with him, which gives me a ton of optimism. On Jordan's end, a couple of things that we were talking about throughout the offseason and the spring, man, it was frustrating because at the beginning of the spring, it wasn't coming into play, but his work was there. Like, it was like you can no longer say, man, like you wish he would work differently or hard. Like, there was none of that to it. It was strictly, it wasn't coming into play during those games. And then towards the end, you started to see some at bats that looked the way you wanted them to look. And, even his misses, and I keep saying that, but like, you can tell a lot from a guy in how he's missing. Is he missing the way he wants to miss, or he's just getting beat? And we started to see a little bit of that towards the end, and it's carried into the first four games here of the season. And I do believe in Jordan, and I think he can carry this.
That's Ollie Marmol, Cardinals manager. Game five of the season is tonight against the Mets, 6:45 start at Busch Stadium. We'll have it on KMOX. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji along with me.
And now, back to All Access with Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol. Sponsored by Window World. Simply the best for less. Siteman Cancer Center. National leaders in cancer. And by Circa Sports. Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be. On the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
Welcome back. Good to be with Ollie Marmol, the Cardinals manager, for another season with Bernie Miklas and Chris Ronji. I'm Tom Ackerman. How about this little nugget? Nolan Gorman has an RBI in all four games this season and a home run in two straight. He can become the first Cardinal with an RBI in each of the team's first five games since Pedro Guerrero in 1989. Pedro. My gosh, you're going way back there for that one. So it's been a nice little opening for Nolan Gorman. Chris Ronji, go right ahead.
Yeah, it's a nice opening as well for J.J. Weatherholt, who's somebody that, you know, Cardinals fans really have been excited about him going back to last season. And everything we hear about him is that he's, you know, he's just got the right attitude. And we've talked to him a time or two, and he does seem to have it figured out, at least during an interview. What is he like in the clubhouse and just being in that dugout?
He's awesome. He really is. His overall demeanor, what I love about him is he doesn't get too high, too low. He's just very steady in how he approaches the game. He's consistent in how he comes in. It was actually fun to watch. He worked really hard during the offseason on defense, and it's something he wanted to just continue to get better at, specifically his backhand. And it was really interesting to watch him come into spring training, and the first two balls he gets are two backhand plays that he kind of botches a little bit. And in talking to him, like, you couldn't tell. Like, wasn't bothered by it. He knew, hey, I got work to do, And I know how I'm going to go about it, and we're going to get better at this. But there wasn't this like getting sped up or anything. So just his overall demeanor, his presence, and he just knows who he is as a person and as a player. And that quiet confidence goes a long ways.
I thought that the walk-off hit in the 10th inning was such a great moment for everybody, including the two that set it up. I mean, Nathan Church is at second. Jordan Walker with a tremendous plate appearance, a four-pitch walk. He lays off those pitches low in the zone especially. And then Victor Scott the second. I mean, he drops down the bunt. He moves the runners over. Everybody's fired up, including Jordan, is applauding at second base, and then JJ did his thing. I thought that was as big as anything. Vic moving those runners over, showing a maturity in his game.
No doubt about it. Everyone has to understand who they are and what they bring to the table, right? And then utilize that appropriately. And what we're seeing, Vic spent a lot of time with JJ, John Jay, this spring bunting. He didn't miss a day. It was every single day off the machine on the half field, just sitting there in different situations, different touches. And he's feeling more confident and being able to execute that in a game. And we're seeing more of it. And it's going to help a ton. It's going to help him, and it's going to help the club. So what I like about those two went different, right? We give up a ton of runs, 6 runs, and then we're able to punch back with 8. Then we have the lead in game 2 and we give it up and then able to punch back. So it's a different feel in that dugout when those two things happen. And I just love the way our guys continue to respond, because regardless of situation or score, there's a style of play that's been consistent. And it's a style of play that I truly believe this city will get behind and respect, that it's going to be scrappy. They're not going to give in. And regardless of what's going on, man, they're going to play that way. So I love what's going on. It's early. And we'll have more opportunities to prove that or not. But I like the way we've responded so far.
Yeah, when you do that, when you pull out that type of play and get in the other team's face, if you will, I call it marmalized.
Boy, I'm sure the fans are going to love that, Bert.
Yeah, I know. I did that to get them mad at me and you. Yeah, anyway,
there you go.
That's usually not a problem. No, all kidding aside, let's talk about the bullpen. And the one thing that I find interesting, and I have reminded everyone, early last season, the bullpen went through a really tough stretch. It was about 25, 30 days. You and Dusty reordered some of the things down there. Yeah. And then after you got through that turbulence, I mean, statistically, you had a top 5 bullpen in the major leagues the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Talk to us about the early problems. Tell us why you understand bullpens are volatile and why people shouldn't, including media, overreact to what we're seeing so early.
I would say a combination of things. When you look at the three in the back end in Stanek, in Riley O'Brien, and JoJo, I think there's different ways of using those three. With Riley not having a full spring training, we wanted to make sure we were getting him the appropriate work in the right spot and him coming out of that feeling good, recovering, and he's in a really, really good spot. So I think there's a way of kind of mixing and matching depending on what's needed from the seventh inning on. Swanson, I think, is a guy similar to how we utilized Leahy, of bridging you to that back end and giving you multiples, being able to get you an out in the fifth or sixth and get the next inning. But what we've seen with him and Roycroft up to this point, like I said earlier, I don't think that's going to continue to play out that way. I do think a lot of the soft contact will start going our way. A lot of it didn't in their couple outings. And then we still have to continue to, I mean, figure out with push what that looks like. So I like where our pen's at. I like the lefty option in Brewer and what he's done up to this point. So it's part of it is just allowing it enough time to settle itself. And then those roles start to define themselves as well. Like those guys will tell you where they need to pitch, whether it's up to or down to. And then you kind of roll from there. And then if an adjustment needs to be made, like last year where we flipped some guys and then that's an option too. But I think you have to give it enough time to settle down a little bit. I mean, we're 4 games in.
Yeah, you're almost one turn through the rotation. Andre Pallante will start tonight. So what have you thought of the first 4 games so far?
Yeah, it's been good. I thought Libby did a really nice job. McGreevy that was fun to watch. I think he'll continue to get better as the season goes from a velo and everything else, just ticking up standpoint, but he was able to navigate that lineup and I was pleased with what we saw. Obviously didn't give up any hits. May, I'm not worried about this guy's stuff is real. They were on that heater. We'll continue to look at it as far as if there's anything there, but man, they did a really nice job, had a good approach and did not miss the heater. So, I'm looking forward to seeing his next time around. Leahy, I felt like did a really nice job yesterday of mixing all his stuff. Hit a wall there going into that last inning, but he needed to feel that in order for him to be better prepared for his next outing. So I didn't mind that at all. You take him out there too early, and then the pitch count doesn't get to where it needs to, and then he's in the same spot his next outing. So I liked what we saw to him, and then I'm looking forward to seeing Pallante. He had a good spring. He's as confident as he's ever been. So I'm looking forward to seeing his overall presence and how he takes the mound tonight.
You've had a few questions in here about ABS. Here's BC Buckner.
Yeah.
Hey, Ollie, BC here. Not a huge fan of this whole ABS thing. That's one of them. You had a couple of people asking about ABS. Just your thoughts on ABS overall so far.
I really like it. And it's one of those things where I think we'll continue to get more and more used to it as a, like, just as a fan, but as in my seat, player seat, it's a really good thing. And I've had a lot of conversations with not only players, but with umpires. And it's something that they are for as well. The conversations I've had, at least, because at the end of the day, man, these guys also lose sleep when they miss a call and it flips an inning or it flips a count, flips the score. And the game changes because of it, right? So it's nice to know that there's a safety net there, that the right call is going to get made if you challenge. So I think the two challenges is appropriate. I feel like one is, that'd be tough. Three changes the strategy a little bit. I think two feels right at the moment. And I actually like the whole setup, the system, how quickly it happens, all of it. I'm a big fan of it.
Would you ever want to see it where all the pitches are called with that system? Or do you like the challenge system the best?
I like the challenge system the best. I do. I like where we're at with it right now. I'm not sure I would fully go to the where there's not a umpire behind there actually calling the game. Yeah.
Ollie,
it's going to save me a lot of money, too.
You know, it's interesting because with a lot of fanfare for some of your guys, well-deserved. It's interesting. Like, Alec Burleson's been so good so early defensively as well. And it's interesting because what do you think his upside is? Is there another level he can get to? Because he was pretty damn good last season. He won a Silver Slugger. What is your belief about his full max potential and what he can become?
I think there's – this guy has some real hittability to him. He really does. And it's one thing when you have the hand eye and you can catch barrels the way he does, but the way he thinks about his approach, how he's being attacked, what the pitcher's doing, the way he sees the game. Like, people always talked about, and this is not a comparison, so just stay with me here. Like, in the dugout, when Albert wasn't hitting, he was eyeing the pitcher for every little detail, not only the sequence, but if he was giving anything away, man. And Alex sits there and he does the same thing where he is studying every single minute. And it allows him to have some really productive at bats. So in hearing him speak about how he's going to attack a pitcher, what he's seeing, changing his game plan mid game based on what's going on, like, there's some real upside to it, and I think we're just starting to see it. So, yes, Silver Slugger last year did a really nice job, better job of controlling the strike zone, picking his spots, but I think we're going to continue to see a very, very productive Burleson.
What is the latest on Lars Nootbaar? We had a couple of people asking about that.
Yeah, just continuing to make progress with his running progression, and this is going to be several weeks of that, of him making sure that we're not rushing through that. He did not have a regular offseason of building up his lower half, so there's a combination of making sure that that's up to speed, and then that running progression is what it needs to be. So slower process, but one that we want to make sure we get right.
I know you've been asked this a lot throughout the spring, but I want to go into it again. You're in an interesting situation as a manager, given the situation your team is in, the franchise is in. And you mentioned the Leahy thing last night, and I thought it was a great answer because that's exactly how you should handle that situation.
Yeah.
But here's the question. Given the priority, sort of the long-term priority and wanting to, you know, give all of these young players a full opportunity, how does it affect in-game strategy? Like, will there be moves, or have there been moves that maybe in the past you wouldn't have made?
Yeah.
But you're just not in a kind of normal situation, everyday situation. There's another priority mixed in. So talk to us about how it impacts strategy.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it does, not all the time, but there's opportunities. There's situations where it comes up, and it does. Yesterday was one of them, right? If that's a must-win type of game where Leahy's not going back out there, you can see that he's starting to taper off and labor a little bit. But if you're thinking about his next outing and the one after that, taking him out at 60-something pitches, 70 pitches, it is not the right thing to do for his overall development. So would you just go Swanson there in the sixth? And absolutely. That's the decision that you would normally make. Him feeling another 12, 15 pitches in order to better prepare for his next outing is part of that development process. So there's times where you pick your spots and say, you know what? No, we'll pick another spot for that. And there's times where you allow it to play out. And especially based on what you have in the bullpen that day, like, You can make different decisions and pick your times for development over just win at all costs. But those type of things present themselves fairly often, and you have to make a decision on it. And I think we will balance, and that's part of the job, both of those really well, because you want to develop, but you also want to develop winning players and in a winning environment. So I think there's opportunity for both.
You did mention a moment ago that ABS is going to save you a considerable amount of money. You led the league last couple of years in ejections in the National League.
No. Booney got me.
Well, he led the American League. You led the National League.
Damn it. All right.
So he's on like a 5-year run. Like he's had the most 5 years in a row, which is pretty impressive. Do you set a personal goal as far as that goes? Like, man, I just want to try and stay in the game this year, or do you just let it fly?
I set one last year, and the entire staff took the over, and they won. So yes, I do try to. I've gotten better. I've tried to stay in more games. That's always the goal. Then baseball happens. Yeah.
We look forward to the next time we visit. It'll be on April 7th, next week, when you are at Washington taking on the Nationals. Good luck tonight against the Mets. And thanks, as always, for these visits, Ollie. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, guys. Good to see you, everybody.
Good to see you. Ollie Marmol, Cardinals manager, with us on the Gas House Gang. We'll continue the show right after this.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
That's right, Budweiser's in now. Remember when we did that Budweiser toast to Katie Wu?
That's right.
It is now a thing. So every Wednesday, I do believe. Tomorrow we have a ball game, so
we can't
do it. But every Wednesday, we're going to toast somebody with ice cold Budweiser. I got to fill up the fridge in the sports office with Budweiser, and you and I get to have a beer in the middle of the day.
Go.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah,
I mean, that's how that works. We love our sponsors. Thank you, all of them, for coming in with Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Thanks to Ollie Marmol, Cardinals manager. It was great. Bernie, it's Andre Pallante starting tonight, and I don't want to put too much on the guy, but I think this is a big start for him. A big start for him. He was hit hard by the Mets twice last year. He's obviously coming off a very difficult season, not to mention there are some pitchers behind him. Richard Fitz is one, but the other one's Hunter Dobbins. He's about to go on a rehab start, so they could replace him if things go sideways with Andre. So, I mean, you hope for the best from the guy. He's one of the great guys in that clubhouse, but it is what it is.
I understand why they're sticking with him for now, or why they gave him the chance to go into the season still in the rotation, because number one, 2 years ago, he was really good. Last year, he was not good and failed to make the adjustments, or the adjustments he tried to make just weren't effective. So metaphorically speaking, you know, they put him in the shop this past off season, and they still had him in the shop in spring training, making some changes in his pitch arsenal. And he's diversifying his pitch mix, And I think they've kind of changed some of the shapes of his pitches. And they believe he's going to be, you know, more capable of fighting guys off and adjusting to what opponents are trying to do to him, make those adjustments in game. Now, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it's a big, big question, to your point. And they, unlike last year, they will have other options. They will have them soon. Now, he's out of options, which means that could still provide a little extra layer of protection. So we'll see how that figures in. But that's the part of the starting pitching I really like. The Cardinals, compared to last year, clearly have more depth, more choices available to them.
Yeah, and he's probably the one guy in the rotation has the least amount of leeway as far as performance goes, where if it's not working, I don't think they're going to sit through it for a really long time like they might do with Leahy or McGreevy, you know, younger pitchers, or Dustin May, because they got him to be an everyday starter, or, you know, somebody who's going to start all season long. That's his role. But for Pallante, I think they kind of, for the most part, they probably have a really good idea of what he is, right? And so he's got this opportunity now. I think they're just going to let him have it for as long as he performs well. But at some point, if it doesn't work, and he hasn't started yet, he will tonight. If it doesn't work, I think they'll move fairly quickly on him, though the options might be the one bit of cover he's got. You're right.
Yeah, Dobbins starts tonight for Memphis against Norfolk. So that's something, obviously, something definitely.
He'll need a few, but yeah, he's on. And Richard Fitz would be ready right now if they want to. So it's interesting. It really is. And, you know, I give Dustin May a mulligan. I'm not getting soft in my old age. It's just that I understand the nature of this season, and I view it through that prism. I give him a mulligan, and I really wish people would stop emphasizing so much, like his velocity. Oh, my gosh, he's throwing 97. Oh, my goodness, he's throwing 98. There's so much more to what he will have to do to be successful that has very little to do with velocity. And so let's just, you know, kind of pipe down about that a little bit, and let's see what he does with his variety of pitches and whether he's locating pitches where they need to go. I mean, he threw 98 the other day a lot, but he threw it right down the middle of the plate, and he was throwing other stuff that drifted across the middle of the plate. So my personal thing is the Grouchy Bernie segment today is shut up about velocity with Dustin May. Just he's got to make better pitches.
Yeah, this is about pitch making. McGreevy has what's his fastball? 91 right now?
Right. You know what? That was Tom. Thank you, brother. The other day, I'm on X, and I'm not ripping anybody. People are just like, oh my good, McGreevy's velocity was down. Oh my god, it was down because he was doing different things with his fastball. He was intentionally taking miles per hour off to kind of like make the pitchers go, whoa, what is that? You know, that thing came in kind of slow. I mean, again, everybody of a, you know, just this velocity addiction. And we forget about the art of pitch making, you know?
Well, I will defend some people when they look at velocity and it's down because they get worried about injury. If you're working off prior knowledge, guy was throwing 95, now he's throwing 92, you think, okay, something's got to be wrong with him. So there's that, but outside of that, I mean, I get what you're saying. If you're somebody who wants to throw more innings and is trying to put less stress on your arm so that you're capable of going deeper in games, I think that's okay, but you just have to be getting outs with whatever you're throwing. If you throw a 91, you better be getting outs with 91.
Right. And I think the injury concern, to me, becomes a factor as related to velocity if it's a trend that covers several starts. But like one start the other day when he clearly was doing some magician type stuff on the mound, like diversifying things, I thought it was really good pitching. Yeah, can I tell you a hitter's example of that if I have time? And I'll be quick. Nolan Gorman. Like I was looking today at, you know, his hard hit rate. It's really low. So people say, well, you know, maybe it's not what it seems to be. Actually, it is, because his strike zone judgment is so much better. He's not like just going up there like hacking and ripping at everything. He's being more patient. He's taking more pitches. And he's also waiting longer in the box to decide, identify a pitch, and then decide whether to swing or not. So he's actually swinging the bat a little slower, but he's doing it because it gives him a better chance to make contact and put the ball in play and get hits. But when he sees a pitch that he can rip and blast, it's going to go 430 feet. So we got to differentiate between exit velocity and pitching velocity. There's a lot of times there's more stuff going on than we realize.
If you're new, it is called the Gas House Gang. We talk baseball, other sports as well. We have the manager of the Cardinals on the show every Tuesday, and this is the station that airs Cardinal baseball. Cards and Mets tonight at 6:45.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Welcome back, the Gas House Gang, final segment on this Tuesday. Cardinal baseball coming your way at 6:45, 5:50 for the pregame with Chris Ronji and Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman. Bernie, Ollie Marmol joined us today, the Cardinals manager. He seems to be in a very good place. I think he is really enjoying this situation. He has a chance, and there is a lot on him, obviously, always, as the manager. There's no less pressure necessarily, but he has a group that he can mold and try to grow into a champion.
No doubt about it, and I think his relationship, his working relationship, and also his personal relationship with Heim Bloom is been a really great thing for Ollie Marmol. It just has been a step forward, because with John Mozeliak, their relationship was fine, but there was always this uncertainty about, well, you know, how long is Mo going to be here? I wish we could do certain things differently, but this is kind of the organizational philosophy. See, Ollie Marmol gets the benefit of all the changes Bill DeWitt has made now. He gets a chance to take advantage, if that's the term. And listen, more of this will come later rather than sooner. A player development in a farm system that is now really up to speed in a way it hasn't been in a long, long time in terms of tools and capability and instructors and everything. So as a manager, he will benefit from that. And also just the communication with him and Heim Bloom is excellent. They're both on the same page about stuff. They have open discussions. They debate things. It's a really healthy situation. But at the end, they come up with a plan. They agree to a plan. And it's the way front offices and managers now work these days. And the Cardinals have it in a way that's better than it's ever been, at least since the days of Walt Jocketty and Tony La Russa. So these are all really good things. And I think that's why Ollie's in a really good mood. I think you saw him in spring training. It was remarkable to me how comfortable he was and how upbeat he was, and also how transparent it was and how forthcoming he was in terms of explaining things. I mean, he really put everything out there. And this is a guy that realizes he's in a different spot now, and he loves managing this kind of team because it gives him more of a chance to teach, and his coaches more of a chance to teach, and more of a chance to implement some of the tools they didn't have before. And he also knows it's going to be an adventure. There's going to be times where they look like they've never played the game before. That's a young team. It's the youngest team in the majors. But the adventure is also part of the fun, because you want to help this team grow. So that's why he loves his job right now.
And you know what else? When you talk about the communication existing between Ollie and Heim Bloom, there's another thing, and this is more selfish from a fan/media perspective. I really appreciate and hope it continues. And I don't have any reason to think it's going to stop. But the fact those two guys are so willing to communicate to us and to the fan base and be clear about, I mean, they're not going to give us every detail, but what they're thinking, what their plan is, if something went wrong, describing why they think it went wrong, or maybe admitting to a mistake even. And, you know, Tom talks to Heim every Sunday. We've had him on a couple of times on this show, had him on an opening day, and just the willingness to be able to talk about almost everything, I think is really, that's, you know, the old proverbial breath of fresh air. I love that. I love that both of these guys are willing to explain themselves, even when a lot of people disagree with what they have done, or, you know, don't like a particular move or whatever, or have, and I'm saying a lot of people do disagree. I'm saying if they do, those guys are willing to explain it. And I think that is super important.
And both of those guys, Tom, you've known this too. Both of those guys have communicated to me, and I know they've communicated to most media people that, you know, cover baseball. It's like, listen, if you got a criticism or you think we're screwing something up and you feel strongly about it, tell us. Let us know. Send me an email. Send me a text message. Come down to the ballpark, whatever. We're happy to explain why we think the way we're thinking, even if if you guys disagree, that's cool. Let's talk about it. I don't remember anything like that, except maybe going all the way back to Tony La Russa, who always enjoyed explaining himself, especially if a columnist, a writer, a broadcaster expressed a dissent about something that he did. He wanted to have a great conversation about it. So this stuff is really healthy for the overall culture of the team. You know, maybe the media is not important, you know, so to speak, but it is, because we're the conduit to the public.
So when you said, Bernie, you brought up the or you coined the term marmalizing. If we are all on board with Oliver Marmol, does that mean we're drinking the marmalade?
Oh, boy.
See,
I had to put that out there
because it would just get. I got to throw the haters some stuff. I just have to. See, they think I don't like them. I actually love them. I give them material.
Yeah,
I got to keep
love
them
the
going,
haters.
Right?
They're the ones.
But no, but with the, you know, the way they described, they're going to go at it. They're going to be in your face. They're going to be exhausting to play. They're going to be relentless. They're never going to back down. They're going to just run and fight. And I'm like, and they did that against Tampa Bay. And so I texted Ollie the other night, you know, just to break them a little bit, and I said, oh man, you guys marmalize the Rays. and see, now right now the haters are screaming. They're going on X to blame. It was a joke, and he got it, and he laughed.
That's good.
A little levity is okay, my friends. It's okay.
That's right. No, it's absolutely right. And then the fans are engaged, fully engaged with this team right now, which is exactly how everybody over at 700 Clark Street likes it, I assure you. Bernie Miklas, we appreciate you. Chris Ronji, Matt Pajeski, Frank Ladd, Ollie Marmol. What a show. Thanks to all.